everybody. Welcome to today's episode of Power Up. Maude and I are super excited because today we have a very special guest. And I've had a couple of people message me on Discord and say, Trisha, I didn't think it was a special guest week. It's a special guest week now, and you'll see why in just a second. So Maude, do you want to tell everybody what Power Up is in case this is their first time?
Hey, if this is your first time, welcome to Power Up. Power is an acronym. It stands for playing, watching, reading. And for the last, 6 years with Geek Bomb, I believe actually our guest was a Power. The initial original formation of it, like 5 years ago, I guessed on Geek Bomb. Ah, amazing. But we basically celebrate geekdom and we talk about the things that we are consuming so that we end up becoming this big sort of like databank of recommendations of geek stuff out there. Thank you so much for watching on Trisha's Twitch page. If you haven't given it a follow or a sub, just, hey, maybe today is the day to do that. If you're watching on Geek Bomb, hi, thank you so much for watching the VOD. If you'd like to give that a sub, please. I am sick of being just a little under 100,000 again. Like, it is just one of these ones.
Oh, no. It's one of those milestones that you hit and then you, like, moonwalk a little. And then you hit, and then you moonwalk a little. I get it. You know what? It happens to everybody, Maude. We've all been there.
This was my silver button, and then a fan sent me a mini silver button because I had dipped under and then got 100,000 again. And then we just stopped doing it now because it's happened about 7 times.
That's amazing. And I love that so much. To anyone who is watching the show on Twitch right now, I do want to let you know that alerts have been turned off for the show, but I will be shouting them out in between each segment. So if you follow, if you sub, you won't hear an audible or see a visual notification on screen for this stream only. But again, we will thank you to the high heavens in between segments. So thank you so much for being here. All right, Maude. Introduce our guest to everybody today.
Guest of ours this week, which I'm super, super thrilled about. He's one of my favorite people to talk to when we have microphones thrust in our faces. But Troy Baker, he and I have been friends for years now. We actually met at Comic-Con about 6 years ago,
believe it or not,
when I interviewed him when I was working for an Australian outlet. Troy is a very established voiceover artist who's done all of your favorite games, including reprising his role in The Last of Us 2, which is something that I'm really excited to talk about, even though you're probably sick of it. But guys, give it up. We've got Troy Baker on today's show. Hey!
Yay! Welcome, Troy. Thank you so much for being here today.
Dude, Comic-Con memories.
We were having a big chat about that just earlier, where there was like, are we kind of relieved to have a year off from it all? Are we a little bit dependent on Comic-Con to have social interactions with our favorite people? The answer is yes, across the board for all of us.
It's always exhausting, but at the same time, yeah, every time I'm always like, man, I'm glad I went. I always think it's like, I feel like Michael Corleone in Godfather 3. I'm like, you know, just when I thought I was out, they dragged me back in. But at the same time, you're right. It's like I'm missing so many people right now that I depend on those kind of interactions to be able to like, oh, let's go get a drink, catch up, and you tell me what's been going on. By the way, this pink highlighter has been with me all day today. So he's the, or she, or non-binary, I don't care, is my plus one today. So you will see this a lot. There other people have commented, they're like, what was he fiddling with? I'm a fiddler, by the way. Not like a fiddler, but I'm a fiddler, so...
Do you have a fidget spinner? I feel like that's the question when you say I'm a fiddler. Do you have like a spinner ring or a fidget spinner at all?
No, I'm too old school analog for that. I have drumsticks, and we were doing, we started this platform, because I don't even call it, it's not even a channel anymore because we're not even really on YouTube. I'm the worst like content creator ever. We have this super hyper-focused platform that we have right now called Relator. And the main thing that we've been doing is every Saturday we've been doing the movies together. And so we all go to the movies. And I took everybody to go see The Matrix, all three of them, including some of the canonical but extemporaneous or superfluous content, The Animatrix.
The Animatrix!
Hell yeah, dude. Dude, once you understand The Final Flight of the Osiris, once you understand who the kid is, you realize Neo's not the one. Woof! I will light your mind up when it comes to The Matrix.
Oh, yeah.
But we were doing Hamilton because it was on Disney Plus, and I mean, God, it's great because what we do is we watch the movie down, and then afterwards we all jump on a Zoom call. So there's like 65, I think, people on this Zoom call at the end of it, and we just kind of go, what do you think, you know, what was your thoughts on this? And then we extrapolate kind of the principles of whatever that movie is, and somehow people always find a way to apply it to their life. And it's been crazy, but we're sitting there and we're all watching it, and I've got my, and of course it's a musical, so I'm like, and like, Troy, stop fidgeting. I was like, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I threw my drumsticks away. So yeah, I'm a fidgeter.
That sounded like,
oh, I could do a paradiddle, 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 paradiddle. It's bad. I've been this way my entire life. Are you a drummer? Oh, that's right. You are a drummer. You're probably a better drummer than I am.
Oh, I'm not. Really? I am not. No. I had a really bad experience when I was on radio because I went to this house party and I, you know, was drunk enough to think that it'd be a really good idea to drum alongside the DJ. And I remember, like, in my mind, everyone was having the best time. They grabbed pots and pans. We were all just like drum fest. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm amazing. I told my co-host on radio that I had done that. And then that night's live show, they wheeled in an electronic drum kit and they played a song from the top 40 and they were like, go on, drum. And it turns
I need to be drunk at the party.
I couldn't drum at all. So I've got like severe PTSD
now.
No. And I prefer to be all talk.
Yeah. Maude, so did you ever study drums, Maude, or you just got into it because you like percussion?
I was in the band. I did percussion. So from like 9, I started doing it semi-seriously. And then by 13, I was having professional drum lessons on the kit. And then it kind of fizzled out because I went to a private all-girls school and no one needed a drummer. So I kind of like tapped out a little bit. And then when I was 19, I bought a drum kit online and it never arrived. And so I took that as a sign that I should just not hit things.
So you were basically Watts from Some Kind of Wonderful. If anybody gets that reference.
Not me.
Not me either. We'll see if chat does, though. Chat very well might.
And my drums, I had such a crush on her. She was amazing. She was just a badass. She was the, if you haven't seen Some Kind of Wonderful, it's incredible. Some Kind of Wonderful.
So, Troy, I know everybody probably asks you how you got into voice acting, but I want to know how you got into music.
I remember the first time I wrote a song, I'm not going to tell you where I was because it's embarrassing, but I was probably like 6 or 7 years old, and music has always just been like that thing for me. I always wanted to tell stories through music, and I've found deeper connection. Like I was telling my wife about this. I don't care what you think about U2. They are objectively probably the last great band of all time. Like if you think about bands that will last for 40 years, right? They've been together longer than U2's been together longer than the Beatles, second to the Rolling Stones or, you know, any of those bands in touring since like 79. Like that's an incredible statement, incredible accomplishment. I had seen U2 every tour except for Joshua Tree. And so 2 years ago, I think it was, or 3 years ago, when they were doing Joshua Tree tour, I got to see them at Pasadena Rose Bowl. And I just wept because it was one of the most moving, the way they did that show is just incredible. And I have such visceral memories with specifically Joshua Tree. Like I told my, like I was 10 years old, I think, when that album came out, 11. And I had the girl that I had a major crush on, and With or Without You was playing. And I was like, hey, and I just like confessed my undying devotion to her. And she literally spun on her heel, didn't say a word, and walked out and broke my heart. And then like I would steal through the night in my parents' car, and I would listen to the A side, which had like With or Without You, Where the Streets Have No Name, and all those songs that you remember that from the album. And I would always, before the album would flip over, like the cassette would flip over, I would start it over again, rewind and play it again. And then one day I just let it continue, and it hit that B side, and it was like this whole other world that nobody knew about. And it was just between me, that album, and the night air. And so I've just got like all these memories. So music has always kind of been my way that I thought I would always tell my story. And then I thought I was gonna be a professional musician, and I thought that I was gonna set the world on fire with my music. I was like, no, that's not gonna be your path at all. And then while I was chasing that dream and trying to kick down that door, another dream and another door presented itself. And lo and behold, I'm sat here in front of you to talk about the amazing projects that I've been fortunate to be a part of. And now I get to, like, we were sitting here getting set up. So I can pick up a guitar and play it without the obligation of it being a vocation, which I have friends that is their life. And it's like, yeah. Dude, this year specifically, I knew a buddy who's a sideman for Father John Misty. He plays keys for him, and he's an incredible musician, incredible producer, an incredible songwriter. And Father John Misty put all of his band on furlough and paid them all for the year because they were supposed to be on tour. And he's just that guy is an incredible, incredible dude. So fortunately, he's okay. But I know a lot of other people that are like, I was supposed to be on tour with you name it artist, and we're not doing that. So I'm glad that this is the path that life put in front of me. And it's a far better version of my life than what I originally had planned.
Have you been working throughout this lockdown? Because, I mean, you can record from anywhere.
Yeah. Well, I didn't know that until this whole thing happened. And literally the day that quarantine started, my agent was getting calls from Warner, Sony, Disney, everybody going, can you do this from home? And fortunately, because people still need cartoons and video games, and it can be done primarily at home. And more than that, the video game industry is comprised completely of professional problem solvers. So they looked at COVID and went, oh, this is bad design. We can fix this. This is a shitty boss battle. they redesigned it so that there was one day where I was working on a game, and the day before, this dude came full gloves, mask, hazmat suit, and everything, and dropped off 4 Pelican cases of all I could think about is in Jurassic Park when she picks up the binoculars. And goes, are they heavy? And she goes, yeah. She goes, then they're expensive. Put them down. And it was like, I was like, all of this stuff is heavy. That means it's really expensive. And I had a very intense Zoom call with a buddy of mine teaching me how to do everything. We did actual facial capture from my studio right over there. So
whoa.
I've either been doing a test for a session or in a session since this whole thing happened. Yeah.
How do you do mocap from home, Troy? I need to hear about this.
So mocap, there was talk about it. They were like, if we dropped off a Vicon system to your room, would you be able to? I was like, I can try. But the facial capture, at least I could do. So yeah, I mean, it's, look, I'm super grateful for the people that have been able to, in like the case of The Last of Us, where you're in the middle of crunch and this happens. That's literally the worst time for that to happen. And every other person, like Ghost of Tsushima, which just dropped today, mm-hmm. you know, they got impacted by this. Iron Man VR, another Sony game, they got impacted by this. So all of these people, whether you like these games, think they're great or not, it's a miracle whenever a game ships, period. If a game can ship under those conditions,
yeah,
you gotta at least give them props for that. You know, you may not like the whatever basketball team, but if that guy does a 3-pointer from the top of the key, you still gotta go, all right, that was good for them.
Now,
this is pure vodka, by the way. So,
go for it. It's your weekend. Get it going. Now, Troy, do you have like a professional VO booth set up in your house that just lives there all the time?
I mean, I have. I'm staring at it right now. I'm not ignoring you. Trisha, I'll speak with you in a moment.
Okay.
I have a closet. The beauty of this is like, we were house hunting when this whole thing started, and that was like, okay, we're going to wait for just a second and just kind of keep everything now. I've been able to figure out what it is that I would do if I were to build this out. And so I've got a great system that I've just completely destroyed this closet and turned it into a booth that's functional. And like Hollywood Reporter did a piece on several artists that are VO people that are working at home. And then you had like their kind of setup and then mine, and my desk looks like the desk of the Enterprise because it's just like gear.
Yes.
Not everybody is that. And I also know people that are like, yeah, I've got pretty much just like a laptop and this thing and that's all that I need. And they're producing, and you're producing incredible content. This is just my golf. Like if I had to do anything else in the zombie apocalypse, if they're like, somebody's like, quick, we need someone to be able to put together a rig. I'm like, I could do audio. Okay, how can I help you?
Well, I'm the getaway driver, so that's great.
Are you? Oh, dude. Yeah. Then I'd be able to record it or whatever. Like, I could maybe mix. I could make a good song, and then we could just steal off into the night and not get destroyed by zombies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would. In the zombie apocalypse, I'm definitely, if there's electricity, I'm the tech girl for sure.
Yeah.
Are you? Are you IT? Oh my God, are you the person who goes move?
Yeah, I'm IT if IT exists. It depends what type of apocalypse we're in, but if it exists.
Well, and the good news for you guys, if shit goes down with the Zompoc, because, you know, petrol is a limited resource, once we don't have any vehicles, I am the person that is willing to sacrifice myself to save the group. So.
Oh, Maud.
Yeah.
Is that you? Is that what you do?
Yeah, I would run that way, draw the zombies. They would all climb over me and destroy me, and it would be agonizing because they would rip me from them, and I would still be alive. My entrails are out, but I would see you guys through glistening eyes making your escape, and I would be like,
when schools would reopen, then we would name one after you. Be like, that is Maud High.
Maud is high. She would have to be to do that.
I'll do it. I don't care, man.
I want to talk about
zombies. All right, come here. I want to tell you something weird.
You got a little something. Just a little something on your face.
It was funny. I have not gotten high all quarantine, which is not like, oh my God, you get high every day. But I'm just saying, you would think, like, I know that people are like, oh, my liver, you know, is really starting to hurt because of quarantine. It's like, all of my vices have been, I guess because I've been like agile. I've been trying to stay on my toes and make sure that I don't get too crazy. Like, that would be the worst thing if you had to like gear up for a zombie apocalypse, whatever, and you were hungover. It's like,
with a wailing liver.
I had
a really heavy first month of drinking because it's just like, that's when we just didn't know, or we only thought it was going to be like a month off before we get back into it. So it was like, oh, it's 5 o'clock, glunk. And then I don't really drink that much anymore. And I, you know, have been trying to exercise. I've been trying to do all right. You just got to keep this okay, really. That's the number one.
That has been my number one activity. Have you learned a language? Have you started like going down that path?
Yep, I did that. I started Japanese.
Ooh. That's what I said.
Genki desu ka?
Genki desu ka. I lived in Japan for 2 months on a gig, and it was so much fun. And the coolest thing was when I could walk into the Starbucks and order my coffee and do it all in Japanese. It was like, I get living or learning by immersion.
I'm the same. And what they've done in this app is that they're trying to get you to identify kanji. And I think that's what it is, like the characters. And I need to be able to visualize how the word looks to be able to retain it.
Yeah.
So when they started just going, all right, you need to learn Japanese characters. I was like, this is actually so much harder because I need to be able to see ka, bi, ka. Oh, there you go. Last time I spoke to you, you told me the most incredible story about The Last of Us and a moment that you shared because it was going sort of viral, this image of you, you know, the moment in the first game where your daughter dies, and it was the most heart-wrenching thing, and you told us the story behind that. But I haven't actually spoken to you since The Last of Us 2 came out, and I know that a chunk of people have finished the game already. I wanted to know what the biggest difference was from 1 to 2.
Without spoilers, I will say,
because have you recovered yet? Have you emotionally recovered?
Have you played it? Have you dove in?
I haven't finished it.
Okay.
My Twitch playthrough, so everyone that's watching this right now live on Twitch, we are on Abby's Seattle day 2.
Okay. And this is your first go, Trish?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Man, I had a great conversation with Neil about this. We had like a 2-hour conversation.
So that, yeah.
And my favorite part was when he was just like, fuck it, I'm going to answer the questions. I was like, yeah, baby, get into it. What was the biggest difference between 1 and 2? I had my obstacles with 1. I think they're probably still foundationally the same obstacle, just rearing its head in a different way. But the first one was me trying to prove to people, like I told you in that conversation, like me trying to prove to people that I was a good actor but which means I was trying to prove to myself that I was a good actor, and overcoming that and learning the lesson and walking away from that, that the character has to be bigger than the actor. And when we flip that and we try to make the actor bigger than the character, then people are typically like, meh. Or all I see is that person. I don't see the character.
Yeah.
So when you walk into part two, or when I walked into part two, it was like, holy shit, this character is big. It meant something to people now. This story meant, it was no longer ours. It belonged to the world. And it was easy for me to get hung up in what will people think. And any time that Neil and I, there's like two or three times when Neil and I like butted heads, it was always because I was afraid of what people would think. And, and I would, if I'm really honest about it, it was because I'm afraid that people would think this. Now, at the root of it was because I desperately love that character and I love this story, and it's the greatest thing I've ever been a part of. What it has left in its wake is evidence alone of its art, whether you agree with it or not. You can't deny it. It's objectively masterful. Whether or not it's your taste, whether or not you agree with it, you can't. That people are saying it's lazy writing, I'm like, okay, pitch me something better. Pitch me a better version of the story. I would love to hear what version you come up with, because that's a pretty smart mind. Minds between Hallie Gross and Neil Druckmann and the 300 people that work at Naughty Dog that crafted that experience, that are at the top of the industry, and they've been doing this for 7 years. They've been working on this. If you can come up with a better version in a couple of months, go for it. You may be the brightest minds working in video games today. Go ahead.
I have a question about that, because we saw it with Star Wars as well, where people start having this ownership over the properties that they like, and then complaining that it doesn't fall within what they particularly like. And they have this sort of like suggestion that they can do a better job. And it's like, yeah, look, you're sitting in your living room kind of like getting angry on Twitter, and you're a little bit all talk there. And I think that we are actually starting to forget art as a process, and more of an afterthought, where it's like, oh, I would have done that differently. And it's like, yeah, but do you understand what that was to begin
with? Not only that, but I feel like what we've abandoned completely and left in the rain is discourse. Because I watched a documentary about flat earthers. A lot of people watch this documentary. And when I finished it, I went, got it. I understand now. I understand them. I understand our culture. It was so revelatory, because the world doesn't feel right now. And I am impotent to change the world. It is because everything that I do has no effect. It is just, I am beating my hands and my head against the wall, and nothing, there is no haptic feedback that I'm getting. So it's the world that's wrong. There's nothing about me that needs to change. It's the world that needs to change. So I push back against that. And then I abandon it, because I know something that you don't know. I have a completely different, and this perspective shines a light on the fact that this world and this whole reality is wrong. So I'm going to abandon this reality and align myself with this, even though there's no evidence that shows that this is a better version. And then me believing in this reality isolates and ultimately alienates me from everybody else. And then I realize that this belief, which I'm kind of not really digging on anymore, has cost me so much that to walk back from that,
you've gone too far.
I've gone too far. So I have to double down again, because now this reality is all that I have. And there are people that have said, I will never play that game. I'm like, well, then, okay. I can't argue with that. If someone goes, hey, I played it, I recognize these things, I don't agree with the story, I didn't like it, I just didn't feel like it was this or this or this, and they do it in such a, that I'm like, that's discourse.
Yeah.
And I can respect that. It's what people used to do. They used to finish dinner, go into a separate room, and drink fancy bourbon or whatever, and go, I fundamentally disagree with you. Convince me wrong. You know, it's like, that was discourse. That's what we did. And that's what moved us forward. That's what got us out of, you know what? I kind of feel like maybe we shouldn't have slaves anymore. It's like, my God, Johnson, are you serious? You know, what about who would do all the work? It's like, well, maybe we do the work ourselves. Maybe we shouldn't like completely disenfranchise an entire species based upon the color of their skin and actually move this country forward. It's like, maybe you have something there. Hey, have another drink. We don't. That's what moved us forward, and not just shamelessly, you know, yelling at other people and telling them how wrong they are,
without even putting in any work. You're exactly right. You're like, okay, I'm not going to play the game. So you hate something that you've had nothing to do with, right? So you have a baseless accusation. Yeah, but it's their principle. You're right. That personal principle that they have, that they cannot. That's completely unwavering. I get
it. Because you know what I said about it? Oh my gosh. Right. I said it was the worst thing to ever happen to humanity. What if I play it and I have to admit to people that I'm wrong? Nobody admits that they're wrong right now. People that are in the highest power are not willing to go, ah, my bad, y'all. I made a mistake. Sorry about that.
I think the nail on the head of why we have so many issues right now, especially with racism and politics, no one's actually able to say, oh, I had to do a lot of learning here, and I can actually recognize things from my past where at the time I wasn't aware, but now that I have this information, I can actually say that this is not great. But you're right, we are so afraid of being wrong in any scenario, and that double down, defend why. And I've been guilty of this before, relationships that I've had with particular friends, where it's like all I had to do was kind of apologize at that time because I didn't take their feelings into consideration and I truly believed that I was right. I would double down instead of having that open discourse. And yeah, it's such a big learning curve. We could talk about this for ages, but I am so excited to talk about playing.
Well, I will tell you
about games and stuff.
Troy, I will tell you, through my playthrough so far on Twitch, we've been having like this community, the Dragon Rider community, has been having some amazing discourse around this game. Like anything, anytime something monumental happens, which happens pretty often throughout this game, you hit stop moments where you're like, I just need to like pause and let that sink in, what just happened, and let's take a moment to talk about it. We'll just stop the game and like just have a full discourse for a while. And you know, it's nice because you have people on kind of all sides of opinions, but we're all going through the experience together and still able to, as you say, sit in our fancy cigar lounge chairs with our fancy whiskey and have a conversation about it, as opposed to just shutting it down before you even give it a chance.
Yep. I just think if whether or not we did this thing today, we're talking about Ghost of Tsushima, and I was like, is it a pass, play, or platinum? Like, what do you want to do? You want to say, it's not for me? Great, that's fine. It's like, I'll play it and see what it thinks like. No, this is exactly what I want it to be. Those are kind of like the three levels. Are you going to pass, play, or platinum? But at least if you want to participate in the conversation, man, get in the ring. Get in the ring. It's like, just jump in there.
So speaking of video games and pass, play, or platinum, we're going to get into what you're playing in just a moment. Everybody, stay tuned. Troy, we will see you in just a bit. And everybody who's been watching today, thank you so much for being here, and we will see you in just a moment to find out what Troy is playing. Okay, segment break. Thank you all so much for being here. Troy, you're the best. I feel like I could talk to you all day. Thank you for being eloquent and lovely and amazing.
Dude, if you can't tell, it's my pleasure.
I want to throw a quick shout out to Nerd Alerts Game Wizard 01 who resubbed. Thank you, The Clever Librarian, for the resub as well. Foo2099, thank you and welcome back to the Dragon Rider Army. Eprice4000, thank you for the follow. And L. Efron, thank you for gifting 5 subs on the channel. You're an amazing human being and I appreciate you. Ma, do you want to tell people about the after show?
Yes, we do Power Up. We also do Power Down. And Power Down is sort of like taking it a little bit away from playing, watching, reading, and just more being personable, real people and discussing things in our lives, whether it be near emotional breakdowns or, you know, just things that have been bothering us or life updates, things like that. But it is a paid perk tier for $10 and higher if you sign up to geekbomb.com/wait, patreon.com/geekbomb. That's all from me.
All right. So, Maud, why don't you lead us into playing in just a second? Hold on. I'm going to change my mind real quick. Nope, you're right. Let's go into playing. I don't need to fix anything. I thought I needed to fix an asset. I don't need to fix an asset. We are good to go.
Fix that asset. I did the same thing. I went to the same place.
Why? What happened?
All right. Well, the ass set has been fixed. So, Maude, bring us into playing, my love.
Love you. Hey there, you are watching the playing portion of Power Up. I'm Maude Garrett. That is Trisha Hershberger. We actually have a guest on this week because they've been playing a game that they have been dying to talk about. So please welcome Troy Baker as our guest for this Power Up. What is about Ghost of Tsushima?
So, I mean, I'm a little biased because I love Sucker Punch, not only because they were gracious enough to cast me in Second Son, Infamous Second Son, but they're just such a great, the ethos of the studio is such that it's very Marvel in the fact that they believe in the overcoming of obstacles is what makes a hero, and they're definitely telling superhero stories. And they do it in an incredibly unique way. I am not in this game. I'm not in any way endorsed or sponsored by them. I just really, really love Brian Fleming and Billy Harper, Nate Fox and that team that have, they worked their ass off on this game for years. Like, they've been working on this since they shipped Second Son. So that was 2014.
Wow. Yeah.
So they shipped Second Son, they did First Light, they knew they were going to do the standalone DLC for that, they did that, and so the probably like 2015 is when they started on this, like 5 years. Now, if you're Naughty Dog or whatever, or you know, Rockstar, and you can do like, hey, we're going to spend a gajillion dollars in development and everything, then fine. Sucker Punch, while they're a first-party studio, it doesn't have that kind of latitude. Not really anybody does, and unless you are shipping like a God of War or something that's like, holy crap, you sold a gajillion copies. So the thing that I really admire about them is that I feel like instead of just going, let's just make a game, they really looked at what kind of game they wanted to make first. And then they created a world and characters and a story around that. And it's super rewarding. And they also looked and go, we love this about this. And we love this about this. It feels like... Breath of the Wild meets Red Dead meets Assassin's Creed meets Shadow of Mordor. It's just super satisfying game mechanics. Like, the fighting combat system is incredible. The way that they tutorialize and the way that they use the mechanics, like everyone's talking about the wind mechanic. And I'm so used to like in GTA or in Red Dead or whatever, it's like you got your mini map, you see where you're at the blip on the mini map. But they were so focused on the aesthetic, so much so that they put a Kurosawa mode in there that makes it look like it's like the 1954 Seven Samurai.
Right. Are you playing that mode?
I did, and it is hard. you know, I don't realize, and I hopefully the whole art team is going, yes, there's a lot of thought that gets put into all the colors that are in this. But it is cool to play, and it makes for amazing pictures too. And the photo mode is like one of the easiest that I've ever had to use. But it's doing this weird thing where this is kind of a trend in games where it's forcing me to be in conflict with the game, and they're representing that as a character. So like there's a fundamental mechanic in the game that the character is like, I don't want to do that. And so it's this weird thing that they're doing. Yeah. And like narratively it's predicated upon that. And so that's kind of like setting up the kind of person that you want to be, which Sucker Punch always does that. I haven't seen if their karma system is really going to play out the way that I'm such a nerd. Excuse me.
Welcome. So this is where you should be, Troy. Welcome home.
What's the karma system all about?
Wrong, Joey. The combat system is like one of the best things. And the reason why I say Shadow of Mordor, number one, the way that they present a lot of the cinematic moments are done very in-game. Okay. So while you're not necessarily on stick, it's not these big movie moments where it's just kind of like lives in the world. You stumble upon someone and they're like, hey, there you are. And
it's so much more intense than that in Shadow of Mordor. I remember like Matt Mercer and he would do that. Like, because I told him I was really, really into Shadow of Mordor. And he was on a podcast. And every now and then he'd be like, oi, you! And I'm like, oh, God.
Yeah. But does Ghost of Tsushima have the nemesis system?
Dude, I don't know why. There had to be a way that they like somehow locked that thing, like patented it. Because yeah.
So good. That remembering recognition. Oh, I've already killed you. And you're like, yeah, really badly.
or even just how procedurally you can change the look of a character based on what you did with him. It's just like, that's incredible. Mm-hmm. I'm having fun, but it's always like super daunting, and especially coming off of playing The Last of Us Part II, where it's like, this game is on rails and it's incredibly long. And is exhausting. Like, when I got done with it, it's like, holy crap. I think I clocked 28 hours, maybe a little bit more.
On Ghost of Tsushima or Last of Us 2?
Last of Us.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm in deep. This one was like, all right, here's a whole open world. And you go, oh my God. Like, there's so much before. Like, even just to get into the game is they pace it out well. Like, this is going to be a big, I don't know how long they're clocking it in. Like, God of War was like, how long of a campaign was it? I don't know, Red Dead was like 40-hour campaign.
So long.
So I do like those. I definitely think that they're wanting to, but I don't think there's a multiplayer component. Trisha, do you know if there's a multiplayer component to it?
For Ghost of Tsushima?
Yeah.
Not that I know of, but to be fair, I haven't personally dived into it yet because I want to finish my Last of Us 2 playthrough, and I'm only playing it when I'm on stream. So that's why it's been so spaced out that I haven't finished it yet.
Ghost of Tsushima is completely offline, single-player mm-hmm. experience. There is no online multiplayer, leaderboards, co-op, or any kind of online connectivity.
Thank you, fact-checker mod.
Aussies make great computer voices.
It's the only work I get, pretty much.
I was going to say, those are all your famous VO credits, right, Mod?
Yeah, AI.
You might know me
from
it.
AI. Good AI. Good AI. Yeah.
I love it.
The world needs good AI.
So, Troy, is Ghost of Tsushima, would you describe this as, like, your type of game? Like, when you're like, what types of video games does Troy like? Would this be a, like, heck yes or not so much?
It depends. By and large, I love good third-person action adventure. That's like Naughty Dog games, right? So third-person mm-hmm. action adventure, narrative-driven, kind of on rails stories. But I also do love games that allow me to, like Shadow of Mordor, GTA, Red Dead, Ghost, where it's like dropping in the world, and I don't necessarily want to do like, okay, you know, plug away and log 2 to 3 hours to get you through this thing. It's mm-hmm. like, just live in the world. I'm going to go pick up some flowers, or I'm going to do a couple of standoffs and, you know, just satisfactorily, you know, drive my katana through somebody's face and let them. It's the way that they do it too, where people always look surprised that they just got killed. It's always like, how? It's so satisfying. It's not a button mash. Like at Assassin's Creed, it was always like, all right, I can just kind of do this. And you end up kind of turning into Neo by the end of it, you know, just kind of like, you know, it's not too challenging. It's fun and it's repetition. This is every time, at least for me so far, it's been like, you got to parry at the exact moment. You have to dodge at the exact moment. So it's,
I'm not so great with that.
Neither am I. I'm a great button masher.
More or less difficult combat than like a Witcher 3?
Different.
Okay.
There's a lot of comparisons that people make in a Witcher 3. I would say that it is different than Witcher 3, but the vibe is very, very similar.
Okay.
A lot of people are drawing comparisons to Arkham as well, and I'm like, no.
Okay.
Because it's not, or Shadow of Mordor, there's nothing better. You're like, how high can I get my hit count? You know, that was always super satisfying. You're like, 65? Like, I am crushing it right now. And you just feel like a god. This isn't, at least so far, this isn't that. Yeah, that exact thing. I haven't gotten there yet. I wouldn't be surprised knowing Sucker Punch if they end up doing that. But right now, it's like, this could be a game. I talked to a buddy of mine. He's like, I've been playing it for weeks. I'm like, whoa. All right, so it's one of those. You put it in your driver, you download it, and that's just kind of what loads up automatically.
I'm kind of interested. Like, I think I need a bit of an open world adventure again because I'm playing Final Fantasies, you know, at the moment, the 7 remake, and it's
Yay!
Too familiar. You know, sometimes you'll have like two or three quests to choose from, but to progress through the storyline, like it's super linear, and I need to flex a little bit more. I need to run out there. I kind of miss also unlocking portions of the map. And I think it was Shadow of Mordor, or is it Assassin's Creed that did it first? One of them, where you climb the tower, you unlock that area, you kind of get the
Assassin's Creed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That, people still go like, oh, well, Assassin's Creed was so repetitive. I'm like, dude, I loved it. I loved skimming around the rooftops of Acre and just unlocking towers and doing it. Never, the leap of faith never got old for me. Every time I was like, whistle? I would do it for fun.
So Troy, I know we were talking about this, I think, before we went live. We were talking about Comic-Con. Speaking of leap of faith, were you at San Diego Comic-Con the year they had the real-life leap of faith set up, and did you do it?
Yes, and absolutely not. That's why I play video games.
Same answer. Absolutely same answer. I tried to do the obstacle course in there, and I saw someone do, like, the run up the wall, and they had to... As soon as I tried to get up that first wall, this is the first portion, so I'm like 5-10% through this obstacle course. Immediately was like, I don't want to be in this. And thank God that when I did it was like a rope that you had to, you know, get yourself over. I was so tall that my feet were dragging, so I would just walk through that portion. But I was like, it was content source fed, and the camera's in my face, and I'm kind of like, guys, I don't want to do this.
That's the leap of faith that I did mod was for SourceFed back in the day with a GoPro strapped on me. And I had to do the leap of faith, and I'm like pretty afraid of heights. So it was terrifying. And this day, I don't know that I've talked to another like nerd friend that actually did it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Raina Scully did it with me for the video. So Raina did it. You didn't do it at all, Mod?
No. I would rather quit my job, and I nearly have actually been fired from a job because I was signed on when I was a Nickelodeon host. One of the theme parks, I had to do the top 5 most terrifying rides there, but they didn't clear it with me. And I was like, I don't want to do this. And everyone on set was just like, you have to do it. And I was like, No, I don't. And then the producer, there was like a freelance producer, and she, thank goodness, she was like, how funny would it be if every single time the ride started, she would actually sneak off, and then the male co-host was on his own and had to do every ride by himself, and she pretended to do it.
Nice.
And then we cut to me being on the Dora the Explorer, you know, airplane ride in the kids' park. And even then I was like, this is a little high. Like, I know it's like 15 feet off the ground. I'm not liking this either as a joke.
I would wait in line with my friends, and they're like, oh my God, man, can you believe this? This ride, this, you know, the anal raper or whatever. It was like the whatever stupid thing that they came up with. Like, we're good. I can't wait. It does the thing where it like, it lifts your nose back, and then it like slaps you around a little bit, and then it flips you around, and then makes you throw up, and then you have to drink your throw up, and then do it all over again. I can't wait. Let's do it. And we would get in the ride, and as soon as like, all right, everybody get online, the anal raper. And you're like, okay. And the thing would come up. And then they would get in, and I would literally jump out and go to the other side. I'd be like, bye, guys. I would waste my entire day at the amusement park just to, you know, like, they would think that I'm going to do this right. They're like, dude, what are you doing? It's like, I'm never going to get on that. Or like, oh, I got a phone call on a cell phone that I don't have. And I would just leave.
Real important.
No.
Actually, this is bothering me at the moment because I was seeing, I've joined TikTok, and someone that you go around sort of like an office or a workplace where, you know, there's all the generations, there's boomers, XYs, and millennials, and they go, what is the signal to be on the phone? Guys, Gen Z do this.
No.
Yeah. They don't know that that's a phone because they never had
No one holds their phone with a flat.
But you're not holding your phone like this.
Oh,
this
it looks like a phone.
That is the old school original receiver that you would pick up that would have the speaker and the listening device. They have never
seen that. They have never known the truly sublime satisfaction of hanging up on someone to prove a point.
Oh, that clunk. Yeah. Or even worse than that. Hi there, Mr. Peterson. I was just wondering if I could please speak to John. Who is this? It's Maud. We're in science class together.
One second.
There's a girl. Yeah.
Dad, get off the phone. Get off the phone. Or my favorite was always, if you never had to double tap the plastic piece that actually stick up out of the receiver so you could get call waiting. How about that one, guys?
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about there?
Mm-hmm.
Like, hold on a second. I got another call. Check, clack, hello. How about this? Show of hands if you had your own phone line when you were a kid.
Get Wait, out. Phone no, line, right. like your own number or your own yeah. like phone in your room?
Either.
I had one of those clear 80s phones where you could see all the multicolored wires inside them. I had one of those in my bedroom.
So could I call your phone or did I have to call the house?
No, you had to call the house. And my mom would always be listening in on any call.
I always do this to Pam. I was like, hey, let me ask you a question. If you were after school, go to your fridge and open it up, did you have like drinks in there just for you? She's like, of course, like rich kid.
Yeah. I definitely.
If you never had to go to get an unmarked silver canister of powdered drink and pray to God that you got those proportions right, because too much sugar and you would shake for the rest of the day, or not enough and it would be pucker faith for life. That's being a like everybody else is like, if you had a straw that you could put into a pouch, you were a rich kid.
We weren't allowed carbonated
cable. You were a rich kid when I grew up.
I agree. I wholeheartedly agree with that. Chat is going crazy because they have a lot of questions for Troy. Right, and cool. Maud and I have been hogging all of your time. So we're all going to bring in Amy. We shall see if Amy's available. We were having some technical issues before we went live today. So everybody keep your fingers crossed. Let's see if this works. We might have audio only Amy today, which is fine. Welcome, Amy.
Hi.
Hi, Amy is here to guide us through.
That was nice.
Yeah,
Amy's here to guide us through Bombs Away Q&A.
Okay, all right, let's go. So yes, this first question is from Patreon. I will be getting one from Twitch. This one's from Steven Summers. Has a character ever gotten stuck in your head after a project finished? Or are the lines between Troy and the characters you play very clear in your mind?
What?
So, Amy, yeah, go ahead, Maud, did you hear it?
If you've ever done a project and the character is stuck in your mind after you've done the job, and I didn't hear the second part.
And the second part was, or are the lines between Troy and the characters you play very clear and differentiated?
The answer to both questions is yes. Fortunately, the character that I am the least like is Joel. The least like. Fortunately. I would never want to know the loss that that man knows, nor the hardships that that man has had to endure, any of that. There are times, though, when not the line between Troy and the character, but what Troy wants. It feels weird talking about myself in the third person, and what the character needs. And that is when a lot of times the result of that battle would be Neil and I coming into conflict, because there's moments in The Last of Us where I originally was pushing against ideas that absolutely had to happen, needed to happen for the character. And I can get super protective, as a lot of people can as well, because we all have our version of these characters. And so I pushed against that. But that is where I no longer see the character and I just see myself. And the second that I remove myself from the character, then I'm allowing myself to see that character for who they really, really are. And that, to me, is truly loving that character. If you selflessly love that character versus selfishly love them, that to me is the goal, not only as an actor, but also as just someone who is experiencing the content.
I love that question. Amy, have we got one from Twitch chat?
With
audio.
This next one is from Himura Jube. Troy, who's your dream character to do a voice for?
Man, so I used to tap dance around this around this answer, and I always come up with something super clever. It's like the next one that chooses to hire me. but then I was like, I'm gonna be honest about this, and I when we were, because we've got the Avengers game that's coming up, and we were on set one day, And Bill Roseman, who's the head of Marvel Games, is on set, and he's just the biggest nerd and huge comic book guy, and he and I would just go like super, super deep dive into comic books and stuff. And I walked up to him one day and I said, so I just want to say this for the record. Should you guys ever decide to do a Daredevil game, I just want to be in the room. I just want to be in the room. Like, if you go with somebody else, you want to bring in Charlie Cox, I would totally understand that. But it was like, why Daredevil? I'm like, well, two reasons. Number one, there are a lot of people, like my first graphic novel that I ever bought was a Batman graphic novel. It was an origin graphic novel, and it was a super small mini one. That got me into comic books, period. I used to travel with my dad, and he would go off and do his business, and the towns where he was going to had town squares. So like they were off in East Texas country bumpkin towns. And so I would always go and find a comic book store. And I remember I would try to stay there as long as I could until they kicked me out. Read as many issues as I could, because I typically would be given like a dollar to go like entertain myself for 8 hours and feed myself. And so at that time, you could either get like the really expensive trades, or you could get like, here's this one's 75 cents or this one's 50 cents, whatever. Daredevil I could afford. I could a lot of times afford two of them. So I got into Daredevil, and I would read them back and forth and back and forth, and just analyze and study them. And that character was so great, because what Marvel specifically does, and Stan Lee was so good about doing, is the same thing as like Ghost of Tsushima and what Sucker Punch does too, is they have their heroes are ones that overcome adversity. And I love that story, because it wasn't so much about what you were inherently given. Someone said that Marvel is man becoming God, and DC is God becoming man.
Whoa.
And I love that analogy, because it's so true. It's us starting off from a place. Look, it's the Peter Parker bit by a spider. Matt Murdock, you know, blinded by chemicals and overcoming that. It's just all of these things are always about how can you, at Fantastic Four, how do you overcome these obstacles? And how can you turn that into your superpower? And the beauty of what Matt Murdock does too, he kicks ass at night. He's a vigilante by night, and he's a pro bono lawyer by day. And I was just like, dude, that's someone I can get behind. So Bill Roseman goes, all right, good to know. So like somebody tweets out, they're like, ah, Spider-Man, we love Spider-Man. What other franchise would you love to see? And I just simply tweeted out, I was like, ahem, Bill Roseman, cough, cough. And he responded, because he had nothing. He was like probably, you know, in traffic or whatever. And he was like, ah, we all know you're the man without fear. And boom goes the internet. People are like, holy shit. And Bill had to actually put out, he was like, just to let you know, we are not in production for a Daredevil game. But he asked me, he's like, why do you want to do it? I said, number one, because of my story and my connection with that character. Number two, we play games because that character can do things that I can't. Mm. How do you create a game where the character, I can do something the character can't? And that to me is just an incredibly compelling notion for a game. So long answer to a very, very simple question, but I would say to anybody, Bill Roseman especially, if they decide they want to do a Daredevil game, I just want to be in the room.
Fantastic. Clarification, being in the room is just for being able to read?
No, I'm all right. Thank you. No. yeah, I want someone to go, all right, let me see what you, in the same way that they let me do that for Joel and for Booker, which I auditioned for both of those roles, for the Joker, which I auditioned for those roles. Let me just show you who I think Matt Murdock is. This 10-year-old that read those comic books and dreamt about being in that red suit. Let me show you what I think who Matt Murdock is. That's all I want.
Ooh, let me just tell you, if they make a Daredevil game and the fight choreography is as good in the game as it was in the Netflix series, I'm on board, hands down. And if it's got your voice on it, then that makes it even better.
Yeah, dude, what they did with that, and again, I had the chance to tell Charlie Cox this too. I was like, I was a huge fan of Boardwalk Empire, but what they did with that character, what Vincent did for Wilson Fisk, I was like, you guys turned this franchise on its head and made it so freaking cool, and just forever changed those rules for me. Super cool. All right, what else you got?
All right, well, thank you. Those are our audience questions for the playing portion of the show. Troy, thank you for telling us all about Ghost of Tsushima. We will be back in just a moment to find out what Troy is watching. Stay tuned. All right, segment break. Super thank you to, let's see, Melo, WDM1262, Uncal24, and Mr. Mogwai. Welcome, welcome. And the Catnip Ninja, thank you for gifting a sub to Geek Bomb. Geek Bomb is now officially a Dragon Rider again for the month. Yay!
Huzzah! We are running considerably over, so we're going to have to pow through the rest of this one, and I'm so excited to talk about watching as well. But, I mean, is that everything for the shout-outs? Because if it is, we'll get cracking into watching.
I think that it is. I'm changing something real fast. Okay, and we're good, so we can move into watching and find out what Troy's been watching lately.
Welcome to the watching portion of Playing, Watching, Reading. If you're watching this on Geek Bomb, playing's already happened and reading is about to come, but we have an amazing guest, Troy Baker. He's a voiceover artist and actor and done amazing things, but we are moving out of video games and talking about watching. Hey, Troy, what have you been watching?
Oh my God, look at the spoiler. I don't even know who that is yet. This is so great. Oh, this is fantastic. So we... not traveling has really put a dent in my viewing, TV viewing. And I definitely transitioned more. There's so many movies that I haven't seen, like lately.
So you're trying to tackle your movie bucket list?
I'm trying to tackle my TV list.
Okay.
Because before, I did a lot of international travel. So I would load up. I get people like, when do you find the time? I was like, yo, I'm flying across an ocean. That takes 10 and a half hours or 11 hours. From flying to Australia, I've got like 17 hours, right?
Hey,
so
I'm
I've
right
got
here.
Time. And I'll sit and I'll, you know, sleep or whatever. Mm-hmm. Or a lot of times I would do a lot of work and get some stuff done. But by and large, I could at least put down a half a season of a TV, or if I really, really dug something, I could just crush that season on flights. So not flying, like it's so funny because I love looking at my miles, and I was like, look how many miles I got, and I can cash those in at the end of the year, whatever. And I was like, none. You haven't done anything. The last flight that I took was, I was going to Kuwait, and I had a stopover in London, and I landed in London, and I got a message from my manager, and he was like, do not get on the flight to Kuwait. The entire country has been shut down because of COVID. And that was February 29th.
Wow.
And I walked into Heathrow Airport and I was like, can I go home now? And they went, see you tomorrow. I went, okay. And I went into London and I had dinner and I came back and I flew home. I left and was back in 24 hours.
Wow.
My wife was like, what the hell just happened? I was like, I'm not going.
Yeah.
So not being able to have that kind of like in my bubble at 40,000 feet, I typically am relegated to and working a lot, fortunately, whether it be on jobs or relator stuff or just being a good dad, or I have about an hour at night where I'm like, let's crunch into something. And so it has to be something that Pam and I will agree on. So Travis Willingham said, if you like Aaron Sorkin stuff, and I was like, yes, he goes, you would love Billions. It's like, okay. Now, I don't know if you've watched this show, but there is a rite of passage that the show brilliantly does, where it's like, you sure you want to watch this? You sure? And it's the first like 3 minutes of the show. And if you can make it past that, it's incredible. But it is, I love Damian Lewis. I loved him in Homeland. I loved him in Band of Brothers. He's just a powerhouse of a performer. And Paul Giamatti. Paul Giamatti is just transformative. Like that guy is in a period piece or whatever, good guy, bad guy, doesn't matter. And so I'm on season, I think I just started season 4 or whatever. So
nice.
I don't know who that dude is.
Well, I know his name's Casey Stoll, but that's his real life name. Is that what we're talking about?
I guess. What have we seen him in? Like, what else has he been in? I know that
Casey
guy.
Stoll, he's been in a lot. He was actually the antagonist in the first Ant-Man.
Okay.
And I actually was really bummed because I wanted him to be Lex Luthor. I thought he would have made a great Lex Luthor.
I can see that.
Are you talking about the actor in the top left picture?
Yeah. Yeah.
He wasn't he also in, of course, now the name's escaping me, Kevin Spacey's right. The president.
Yes. Thank you. He was the guy interviewing him. That's what it was. He was the author that in House of Cards that was no.
No, he's not. He's the like Philadelphia governor guy. That spoiler ends up in a not so great.
No one's gonna watch that show ever again.
Okay, great. Yes.
Trust
me. The guy they end up killing and making it look like a suicide.
Call of Duty Advanced Warfare. you can prop up a door or a window with those copies. Huh?
Corey Stoll is
Corey,
his name.
That's what it is.
Not Casey.
Yeah, that's what I recognize him from is House of Cards for sure.
That's what it was. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I knew I was, from the thing, Pam and I have been both watching it going like, who is that? Who is that guy? But yeah, it's just such a, like they're doing this really, forward thinking. There's a character named Taylor that's super forward thinking, just how they're tackling it. It's a great show. It's going a little plot heavy right now, which is always kind of where I'm like, all right, rest, you know, kick back on what you were doing before, which is very, very interesting character moments. Because I always believe it's like, if you go with plot, then that's, if you're relying on plot to do anything, stupid.
You don't know the character, like, give a shit, yep.
Then do character, always do character.
But would you recommend Billions? You're liking it?
I would. There's so many shows that I could recommend that are sleepers. One that was recommended to me, Patriot, which was on Amazon, is just, oh my God, I don't know who this guy is. It was, the writer of it is, I will tell you, he's done a bunch of stuff.
Come on, Garrett on the fact check. The writer of Patriot.
Is this on Amazon Prime?
I know I've seen teasers for it, but I haven't seen
Stephen
it myself.
Conrad. Yeah, so Stephen Conrad is the showrunner for it. And Michael Dorman is the main guy. And he is phenomenal.
He's Australian.
Phenomenal. Of course he is.
Yeah.
It's like, he is, you would love this show. It is, the only thing I can tell you is he's a CIA black operative that as his release, he writes folk songs.
I love that.
Cool.
And they are really good. And it is hilarious. It is deeply compelling. It is moving. It is shot well. It is just like, and it's two seasons.
Awesome.
Two seasons, maybe 6 to 8 episodes each.
That actually checks out because for the Australian bushfires, there was an Australian sort of like charity gig that was there, and Michael Dorman sang a song that he wrote, and it was called She'll Be Right, Mate. And it was like, he sang it so ocker and in a real folksy kind of way. And I still remember it. It was the only time I've ever heard this song because, you know, it's his song. But he was so engrossing, and he had the whole like place laughing because it was like, She'll Be Right, Mate. She'll Be Right. And I was like,
He is. He's so good, it makes me angry, like, as a singer. Like, he is so just stripped down and vulnerable. But, I mean, his performance is... Terry O'Quinn is in it. It's that show, is I would highly recommend.
91% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, man. And you said it right, so you know it's got to be good. What else would I recommend?
Yeah, anything you're watching. I've been watching, this just came out today, actually, but I got a chance to check it out a little bit early. The Netflix original Arthurian legend fantasy show, Cursed. So, okay, Troy, the face you just made, that's the face that I made when I was like, ooh, we're getting an Arthurian legend show? Tell me more about it. And it has a female protagonist who eventually, we're going to get the story of how she becomes the Lady of the Lake. If you're big on your Arthurian legend lore. So super exciting stuff. I watched the first 2 episodes already. And I am a huge snob about fantasy epics. And I definitely have my issues with some things in the show. I'm a huge snob about fantasy epics. I'm the person that, you know, Maude, when you were talking about, we were talking about The Last of Us and saying like somehow fandoms take over and have their opinion of how something should be run. Very guilty of that with Game of Thrones. Personally, fantasy epics are like my, like, I have opinions, nerd rage thing. But fight choreo, I'm a big nerd on, and this show didn't do it for me on fight choreo. It didn't do it for me on the transitions, and like the opening sequence was a little strange for me. I'd be interested to see if chat had watched it, kind of what you guys are thinking. But the story I'm interested in so far, the acting I think is pretty good for the most part. The girl who stars in it is...
Australian!
Yeah, Kristen Langford, right? Isn't that her name?
Catherine Langford.
Yes, thank you. And she was in 13 Reasons Why, correct? That's, yep. Yep. Right. Mm-hmm. She does a great job.
She was supposed to be Tony Stark's grown-up daughter in Endgame, and they cut all of her scenes.
No.
Why?
Yeah.
Poor thing. That would be so sad.
They're going to do like this massive, like with Tony's sort of demise, I guess. Like they were going to do a bit of a time jump and see what his life would have looked like with his adult daughter. And
it's a good cut though. You don't need it. Like it's far better. It's like Cthulhu. You don't want to know what it looks like, right? It's just best to be described.
Yeah.
Gotta be true. But anyway, she does a very good job in the show Cursed from what I've seen so far. The person you see in kind of the bottom right screen there is the actor who plays Arthur, I believe. I kind of appreciate the swapped up casting, if you will, from how traditionally Arthur has been portrayed. But yeah, I'm on board with the story so far, but I'm hoping that other aspects of it get better. There are some aspects of it that to me feel like they suffer from maybe lack of budget, or maybe things that were filmed later and kind of thrown on that didn't have the same budget as other things. Like there's some locations where you're like, wow, that location's beautiful. And then you cut to a location that you're like, oh, really?
What happened
yeah, what happened there? Exactly. And same thing with a lot of the special effects. I find that was very hit or miss. But overall, if you're into Arthurian legends, that just came out today. You can check that out. And they also have an AR experience. I'm a big augmented reality nerd. And they have an AR experience right now that I think Steve Zaragoza was Instagramming out a bunch today. So you can check that out if you want to check
him.
It out.
I love him. The guy is just...
He's a funny dude.
Really funny dude. Like a genuinely funny dude. And just kind of he's a bohemian kind of guy, right? He just kind of lives in his own ethos.
I was on the Valley show, a Valley Folks show, your show, yesterday.
Yay!
Very random. And I kind of missed all of that.
Valley Folks? Trisha, what did you do with Valley Folks? How did I not know that?
Well, with Valley Folk, I have guested like a ton for them.
Oh, okay. I was like, wait a minute. I thought you were...
I'm not one of the founding members of Valley Folk. No, 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 no. They got together to do their absurdist humor troupe. And they called me actually before they launched. And they were like, just in case anyone asks, because it's a bunch of SourceFed and like you were of the same era of SourceFed as us. We want you to know that we're announcing this thing and it's not like, you know, it's just we're doing this separate thing. And I was like, hey, Joe, it was Joe Beretta that called me. I was like, you don't have to explain anything to me. Dude, I wish you all the best. I'm sure it's going to be awesome. But like absurdist comedy is not what I want to do with my life in any way, shape or form. I like to make informative content for the most part. That's like funny by accident, but not like I want to do stand up and be very Tim and Eric with it. So I think that they are doing them and it's awesome. And I told them I will guest anytime you will have me.
Ruin us.
Right.
I was super early to this and I got so much shit for it. Cause everyone was like Game of Thrones. I was like, have you watched Vikings? Like that is still one that I was like,
oh my God. Do you know who the lead of Vikings is? He's Australian.
So funny story about that. Everybody has their list, right? Their celebrity list. Like, you know, you get a pass if this person. Mm-hmm. So he is on, Travis Fimmel is on Pam's list. We go to Australia and we didn't know who the headliner was. And we looked down and she's like, there's a picture of Travis on this thing. And I was like, oh, okay. I was like, and someone was like, yeah, he's the headliner. I was like, does that mean he's actually at the show? And they were like, yeah, of course. Matter of fact, it's right over there. And I was like, oops, here we go. Pam's like, I mean.
I'm going to talk something in Power Down about that.
She melted in front of him. He is charming. I was like, I totally get it. It's like, you guys need it, whatever. I get it. But yeah.
You know the first thing that, I'll save it for the Power Down show, but I have a story about Travis Fimmel. Him and I, we're mates.
Okay, well, I definitely need to hear more about that story. But in the meantime, let's bring in Amy with some bombs away Q&A. Audio version of Amy, welcome back.
Amy,
thank you so much. Yay, thank you for that. So this question is from our Patreon. Make sure to go to patreon.com/geekbomb for that. This one's from Thierry Fournier. I'll also be getting one from Twitch as well. Having so many friends playing D&D, have you ever rolled the D20? If not, are you interested in playing one day?
Yes. Duh. I've been fortunate enough to, have I ever rolled a nat 20? Or have I rolled like 20 sided dice? Because yeah, I've rolled. The last game that I got to do, I'm always scared to, because I love telling stories. And so everybody automatically assumes that I'm like really, really good. The only thing about it is that if there's rules involved, then it gets a little weird for me, but it's something that I've always wanted to, like, I've done one shots and I've done two one shots. And what I want to do though is like a campaign. Like I want to grow.
How about I pitch to you a little series called Fungeons and Flagons, and it's all the storytelling and improv without the rules. And we're actually launching season 3 in the next couple of, within the next month.
If I could touch your nose, I'd go boop to your nose. Let's do it. I'm totally down. I want to know the rules because I love, the thing that I love about Dungeons and Dragons is, first of all, growing up, it was, are you kidding me? Do you want Satan himself to come and possess your soul?
Yeah.
I was like, it was not even allowed. It's like, that's how you get demon possessed. It's literally you go to the comic book store and you go say, can I play Dungeons and Dragons? And they go, okay, here's a demon for your spirit person yeah. for all of eternity. It was kind of like that scene in Ghost. They literally come out and just drag you down.
No.
So as I, you know, become my own person outside of the social mores that were placed upon me as a youth, I'm like, wait a minute, I never had a feeling about that. Why? What is this thing? And so people are like, oh, it's like an incredibly, especially for like a kid, holy shit, to learn how to problem solve, work as a team. It's one of the things that I did love about, what's the 80s show? Stranger Things. Starting off with the Dungeons and Dragons, is like, you understand that these kids were already seeing the world in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why this thing found them, is that they were able to look at it differently. So I wish that I had had those memories as a kid, especially growing up in the 80s and 90s. It's like, that's what I would have loved that. And I think it would have helped me as an actor. So yeah, I want to roll.
Sweet. Absolutely. Great question. Thank you, Amy. That was awesome.
All of the D20s for Troy.
Yeah.
Do we have one? This next one's from the Catnip Ninja. What is one thing you want to be taken from one form of entertainment and made into another? Like a certain book into a movie or video game game into a movie, etc.
I have so many. One of them, like, super. Look, I'm never afraid of giving away ideas. The only people that are scared to tell ideas are the people that think that's going to be the last good one they have. So fuck it, I'll tell this one. If you've ever read a book by Cory Doctorow called Down and Out in the Magic Kingdom, it was a prophetic book, way ahead of its time. And Cory is a brilliant writer. It was recommended to me by my friend Chris Sabat, and he was like, I really think you would like this book. So I was like, okay, I'll read it. And I was like, wow, this was a fascinating concept. And I think that would be an incredible game because there's just so many game mechanics that are already built into it. I think that, what was the one with, was it After Earth? What was the one with Will Smith and his son?
After Earth, yep.
Mm-hmm. After Earth. Mm-hmm. That should have been a game because mm-hmm. what they even talk about, he trains his son. There's a tutorial lesson in there of like, how do you teach yourself, like that these monsters were able to see them because of a pheromone that was secreted whenever you experience fear. And this is literally what they talk about. He goes, how can I not be afraid when this huge monster is breathing down on me? They're like, the reason why I cannot be afraid. And he could literally just stand there and like the monster or whatever could not see him because he wasn't putting off this pheromone. Is he goes, because I'm living in the present. And in this present moment, I'm not dead. I'm not at risk. It's the fear that I will be that puts me in that moment. So as long as I'm staying present, and they should have ended the movie then. Who did Gary Whitta didn't write that, did he? Is that Gary Whitta?
I feel like Gary Whitta surprises me and writes everything I truly enjoy in fandom.
It's such a great concept. Yeah, he wrote After Earth.
There it is.
I love Gary Whitta. He's a brilliant writer.
He's also an amazing human. If you just get the chance to hang out with him, Gary Whitta is an A-plus human.
And not only that, but just like I want his show to explode. Like I want him to like rocket up to nighttime and as great as Jimmy Kimmel is and everything, blow past Jimmy Fallon, blow past Jimmy Kimmel, and like Gary Whitta have like the number one late night talk show. Ugh.
All in Animal Crossing, right?
Yeah, Animal Crossing. It's so he's such a good dude.
He's such a good dude. If you don't already follow his Twitch channel, I promise you will not be disappointed. Give him a follow. He's amazing.
He had Sting. He had Sting on his show.
Who randomly busted out a set.
I just start singing a song for you. I don't know that. I was like, oh my God. But yeah, After Earth, if that had been adapted to be a game, holy crap, man. That would have been, that would have been incredible.
Well, that's all we have for watching at the moment. We do want to move on to reading, but don't go anywhere because we'll be back for that. But Trisha is going to do some thank yous.
Yeah. Well done, so let's see what we got here. We have Luther Hitchens. Thank you for the cheer with the bits. You're amazing. Said I've never experienced an Excalibur legend where the Lady of the Lake was the hero of the story. Cursed was a very cool origin story with some bits. Thank you so much. Ollie Morrison gifted 2 subs. You're an amazing human, and I appreciate you. Thank you, and welcome to all the new followers that we've had in this time. Thank you all so much for being here and for watching today's Power Up. So the final portion of Power Up that we're going to do today is reading. I will be able to swap us into that in just a moment. All right, and we're going to find out all about what Troy is reading. Which I'm excited for you guys to hear about this one because I don't know much about this, Troy. So we're just going to let Troy run wild. All right, Maude, you ready?
I'm certainly... Oh, there's a giant plane going by, but yeah.
I can't hear it, if that makes you feel
really
better.
This sounds like the end of the world for me.
Yeah.
Who's on the plane? Anyway.
Yes, I'm ready. I know. Here, are you ready?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Welcome to the reading portion of Power Up for this particular week. We are supposed to have a week off and it's supposed to be about Trisha and I, but I was like, nah, let's get an awesome guest on to talk about what they're playing, watching, reading. If you are joining us live, what's up? If you are joining us VOD, you've already seen playing and watching. It's time to chat reading with Troy Baker. Hi, Laura, Troy Baker. What is happening?
Okay, you going there? Going all right?
Oh, yeah, mate. You lasted a while before doing the Australian accent.
I was going to say, normally I always do this shitty thing where you're like, you got to do your shitty Australian accent for me.
It wasn't so bad.
I thought it was really good.
Look at that. Look at those lovely pictures. My copy of the Tao Te Ching was originally purchased. How did I do this? So my path for this was similar. I grew up, and again, it was like, you think this way. You read this and everything else is wrong, and you don't even, just even opening your mind to it is a danger. So you don't ask questions. And I was like, okay. And then I hit my 20s and I had all of the questions. And the true story is I read a book, you're gonna laugh, but I read a book and I read it in one night, and it was about 450 pages, I think. And I read through the night and I woke up and I read through the night, and in the morning I finished it and I went, I don't know what I believe anymore. Like my entire system of faith had just been completely uprooted. And that book was the Da Vinci Code.
Ooh, yeah.
When I first read that, I think I was like 19, couldn't put it down. Yeah.
What level, first of all, it's trashy airport. God bless Dan Brown for being able to write, you know, make his other books are far, far, far better. But how shitty of a faith system must I have had for it to be rocked by something that you could pick up at $6.99 at the Hudson's, you know, as you're going to fly to St. Louis? So I was like, yo, I need to reach out and start doing some deep dives on like, what do I really think about? What's my worldview? Shit, I don't have a worldview. So I started reaching out to everything. And one of the things was The Art of War. And I was like, okay, but it's like, now it's a book of philosophy, but it starts talking about Lao Tzu and it starts talking about the Tao Te Ching. And I was like, okay, well, I'm gonna go over there. So then like I started following this like, you know, beautiful mind, weird string going from here to there. And that book sat, and I was like, okay, so I have the Tao Te Ching. Look at me. I'm a wizened person, and I'm looking out to other perspectives and philosophies in the world. And that book sat in my bathroom. And so the copy that I have, like, you know, you get in the shower and stuff and there's steam, and it like paperback books don't serve well in that. So my copy of the Tao Te Ching is kind of like wrinkled and everything. As I much later, almost 20 years later, I was in Scotland, I think, and I was going through a really rough time of just like, again, not for the same reason, but just starting to go, how do I feel about this? And I don't know if you've ever had a breakup with a friend, but it's the worst.
Recently.
Like breaking up. Yeah. So you know what I'm talking about. That right there is far more brutal, in my opinion, than breaking up with like a partner, because, you know, you pretty much know that relationship's going to end unless you're going to be married forever. So, but with a friend, you're like, oh, I can't have you in my life anymore. And then you start, my process was, because especially if that person is inextricably tied into your life, it could fundamentally uproot everything, and you find yourself seemingly alone, and you go, oh my gosh, I wasn't prepared for this, and this really, really hurts, and it becomes pervasive throughout your life. And I was like, I need to get a handle on this. So I once again, just like after Dan Brown, I started scratching the surface for everything. And somebody goes, hey, I really think you should check out this book. And it was Meditations by Marcus Aurelius. And it is a 99-page book. And for the next 18 months, I read that book. And I finished it in 18 months. And it's because I would open it up and I would read a little bit and go, wow. And I would just sit and chew on that. And then that led to, I was like, okay, so let me go up the river of Stoicism. Where does that lead? And led back to Seneca and Epictetus. And then I started reading, that's Western thought. So what's Eastern thought? Because Eastern thought can either predate or be in contemporary with that. And so I started going East and West. Mm-hmm. And so I had, that kind of led through different routes, but ultimately it led to like Alan Watts. And then Alan Watts kind of like, I was like, I need to understand more about what this Eastern philosophy is, and specifically the Chinese philosophy is. And so that led to the Tao Te Ching. And I'll read this to you, because it's the beauty of understanding that we fight so hard to understand, and that we fight so hard for these things that we believe in, as opposed to sometimes just being like, maybe I just need to kind of let go a little bit. And, or like we were talking about earlier, it's like, oh, wait a minute, it's me that needed to change. So I'm reading this one thing in the morning, and again, these are very short aphorisms, kind of, you know, pages are like, you know, four lines or whatever. But I said, I sent my friend something. I read one thing, and I said, epiphany. The turmoil I thought existed between you and me existed only in myself. The desire for explanation was the product of lack of understanding. The tension I felt was my own hands pulling the rope from either side. The need for reconciliation was really the need for acceptance. And I just was sitting there, I was like, oh shit, it was my fault. And so I texted him that. And he replied back to me and was like, dude, I've been thinking about this too. And here's my responsibility in this. And I was finally ready to send that message, because I didn't need to hear back that I was right, they were wrong, mm-hmm. and even apologize. I was like, oh, dude, we don't even have to do apologies anymore. It doesn't matter. It's like I feel liberated, because I know I've been hanging on to this. So, and I've gotten made fun of and laughed at and just kind of general shit given by friends for doing this kind of deep dive into how I think, because there's some people that think it's like, I don't know why I say this. I don't know why I do this. I just kind of do it. It's no big deal. It's just a turn of phrase. It's whatever. And I'm like, I want to understand why I do what I do, why I say what I say, why I think what I think, why I feel what I feel. Because otherwise, it's like roaming around with a gun. I could hurt somebody unintentionally or hurt myself. So this has been me predominantly in the wake of not only what I thought was lost, but it was actually preparing me for my son and me just wanting to be the best person that I can be for him, because he is already at two. He's an incredibly cool dude. And like, I look up to him and I have to work this hard just to be good enough for him. That's what
I'm doing. Get out of my head. Get out. Because I'm exactly like that as well. I've been doing a lot of research into different personality tropes because of this falling out that I've had with my friend. And it purely just came down to the fact over one particular thing. And that was that I have such a yearning to learn and to grow and to exactly that, recognize particular faults or, you know, how I can do and be better. But that is something that I, because I'm hungry for it, I am applying it to other people, and I will challenge people going, well, what was it that was wrong? Why can't we talk about it? I'm so willing to listen and to learn and to get better, without actually kind of giving any kind of insight if that's what they want to do. Because there are a lot of people out there that do not like confrontation, and they would actually prefer to walk away from a problem forever than to face it. And if I'm constantly challenging them to face it, it is actually really difficult for them to be my friend. And I didn't realize that.
That makes sense. So, that's a lot of self-reflection.
And so I've had to, that was quite an epiphany that you've given me, which is just like, you know what? I'm so wanting to have those answers that maybe it's actually, why do I need those answers? And is it just, you know, easy just to kind of, is it better to let it go?
Something that was hard for me is, and there's a passage in Tao Te Ching where it says, muddied waters are best left undisturbed. They're best cleared undisturbed. And it's like, yeah, but I want to fix it. We need to get into this. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, actually what you need to do. And by the way, that exchange, that text exchange is 4 years in the making.
Wow.
So it's like, man, being, and I'm not saying it has to take 4 years, but I'm saying it can take 4 years for me to come to that place and for this person to come to the place too. It's like, oh dude, now the waters are clear, and now we can both see the bottom. We can see the hazards that were there, or we can actually see that they're no longer there. Mm-hmm. But it's anybody that tells you that you're stupid or you think too much or you shouldn't worry about this, just let it go, it's not a big deal, it's whatever, that's someone who is afraid of you becoming a better person. Deeply afraid, because it's also reflective of them not wanting to go down the same path. And I believe, man, there's been so many conversations. I don't know if anybody else does this. I have a thing where I play out these scenarios in my head, and I have the whole conversation with that person. Like, I would have said this.
Yeah.
And almost always now, what ends up me going, I would have said this, somehow points right back to me, and I'm like, oh man.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't believe that's my fault. Holy shit. And I will say this to anybody who has gone through a breakup: if you feel compelled to ask them how they're doing, to buy them a gift, you have to do it.
Oh, good. I have.
Yeah, you have to do it. Because to not do that is allowing that hurt and that pain and that strife to remain, to keep you unhealed. You have to lean into it and go, hey, man, I just wanted to see how you're doing today. Hope you're well. Don't need a response back. Hey, I saw this today, made me think of you, hope that you're well, and not expect a response. Or I have to buy this gift for this person, because the only reason why I wouldn't is out of spite. And that has been tremendously healing for me, is allowing myself to feel something other than anger towards somebody. Because if all I'm feeling is anger towards that person, and that's all I will ever feel is anger. And it's like, that's, we have to get past that point.
Yeah, my biggest friend breakup, no joke, Troy. My biggest friend breakup, 10 years we didn't speak. And then at San Diego Comic-Con, I randomly ran into her at San Diego Comic-Con and, like, probably went white as a ghost because she was, like, the last person I was expecting to see because we hadn't spoken in a decade. And we ended up meeting up for drinks at a hotel bar and having, like, a really nice conversation. And, you know, it was super weird to be like, well, what have you been up to these last 10 years? Because at one point we talked every day for a long... We talked every day for 6.5 years and then just stopped speaking. And 10 years later, had a conversation about it. So it really, I think, hits home when you say that the muddy waters might be best left undisturbed. Because there were a couple times I think I tried to reach out early on after that that did not go well. But just letting it be, eventually things got reconciled somewhat. Hmm.
Dude.
Well, I've been emotionally assaulted this particular portion because definitely you've covered two major things that have been happening to me the last 2 months consecutively. So yeah, someone said, well, was this too real for Maud? And I'm like, yep. That's what Power Down is for. But let's bring Amy back in just to do a bit of a final bombs away Q&A, just to answer some last questions because we are running over, and I do apologize for that, people that you know, may have to be somewhere, Troy included. Amy, what do we got from Patreon for questions?
So this one's from Ridian Morgan. How does it feel to be the voice of what many people consider their favorite video game character?
Favorite video game character?
Uh-huh.
How does it feel to be the voice of people's favorite video game characters?
Oh, man. Dun, 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 dun. Equally as interesting when someone goes, you're my least favorite.
That happens. God, people are awful.
Oh man, I did Mass Effect 3. I was Kai Lang in that. I got a lot of hate mail for that. The best compliment I could be given is when someone says, you've inspired me to do this. The second best compliment is when someone goes, that was you.
Nice.
If I can do that, then that means, like, man, I disappeared into that thing. And not like Daniel Day-Lewis. I'm talking about, like, you didn't know it was me. Like, if I can do that, that's me actually really, really allowing that character to come through. There have been incredible moments. I remember New York Comic Con. We'll change the music a little bit. New York Comic Con, we're doing some press for something, and somebody goes, man, I'm sorry to do this, but my daughter... she's a huge Batman fan, and she would just love to hear from Batman. I was like, oh, I mean, you need to get Kevin Conroy up in here. You know, there's like a lot of other people. He was like, no, you don't understand. You're her Batman. You were her first introduction to Batman. And I got to do like this on the phone. It's like, hello, girl, or whatever. And it was like, for this 5-year-old girl, and she just flipped out. And I was like, I know that feeling of when I first heard Kevin Conroy talk to me, and I don't know what that's going to do for that 5-year-old. It may just make her want, you know, juice and take a nap, but for me, that was the inspiration for me to be here is when I heard that someone had, and it was Batman the Animated Series, that was like, that's somebody's job, and it unlocked everything else. I knew who Mel Blanc was, but I didn't realize that was somebody's job, was to go in and make a cartoon and be just the voice of it. And I was like, I don't know. Like, I grew up in, and I had no athletic ability. I was skinny and awkward, and just wasn't comfortable in my own body. Wasn't comfortable in my own skin. And that caused massive, you know, self-image that became deeply rooted. But this one thing was like, but this thing I can do, like I can make my voice do different things, and I can be different people that way. And it won't matter what I look like. It won't matter, you know, the color of my eyes or the color of my hair or how tall or how short or how if I'm muscular or not. This I can do. And that gave me the confidence to be able to pursue other things, to where I go, I can change my mind and the way that I think about the world. I can change my body and the way that it feels and the way that it looks. Not because I'm trying to impress anybody, but because I want to feel better about who I am. So that unlock was a huge thing for me. When someone says, how does it feel to be someone's favorite video game character? I was like, if that makes you be a better person, if I in any way can bring a little bit of hope, joy, or inspiration to your life, then that is a check that I cannot cash, but that I will take any day of the week. Any day of the week.
That's awesome.
So good. Have we got one from Twitch chat, Amy?
Yes. This is from STS2884. What have you always wanted to try with your hair but haven't?
I don't even know who you are, and I love you. Please let this be the absolute last question, because after this entire conversation,
yep.
Holy crap.
This is it. We're ending on this note.
Look, my hair has been like the thing that, for whatever reason, whilst I can control it, I will. And it's been every color of the rainbow that I could think of. I've had good haircuts and bad haircuts. And if you do a Google image search, you can find evidence of both. At 42 years old, I decided, or maybe I was 43, I can't remember. I decided, it was like, yeah, I got a baby. I could do a mohawk. Let's do that. And so I did full like mohawk, and I love it. And I was like, I'm gonna wear an earring again because I want to, and not because anybody else is saying that it's cool or whatever. I just feel like in my 40s, especially, I've come more into, I don't care what's cool. I want to do I want to be who I am.
Preach.
And be okay with that. Because I've seen a lot of brave people that are not dealing with haircuts and earrings, that are dealing with like, no, this is who I'm attracted to, and this is who I feel that I am. And if they have the power and they have the confidence and they have the strength to stand in that and their identity, I can have a mohawk. You know what I mean? I can wear that hat. So yeah, that's my in no way compares to that level of just a certitude and bravery and confidence, but it has inspired me to be like, yeah, I can have that this much confidence to be like, yeah, I'm 44 and I'm gonna have a mohawk.
You're rocking it, dude.
I love it, man.
Going through your cloud hair phase. I was about it.
Yeah, I was
thank you so much for joining us. I think we will wrap things up there. Thank you to the chat, who's been so amazing throughout this entire show. We have caught what Troy has been playing, watching, and reading in this last portion of the lockdown. Again, if you've got subs or if you've got follows happening, click those buttons because we really appreciate it. Trish and I will be back next week. Probably no guess, but we've been watching, reading, and playing a bunch of stuff as well.
Actually,
let's go back to Troy just really quickly to see what where people can catch him,
yes.
Where people can follow him, what you're working on at the moment, what you would like to direct people towards.
Oh, direct people towards their hearts. Twitter and Instagram. I'm more frequent on Twitter at Troy Baker VA. Official Troy Baker on Instagram. Right now, we've got a very, very small, hyper-focused group of people on our Patreon that are learning what it means to be a relator. We did put up a conversation on YouTube with Neil Druckmann. You can go to youtube.com/Troy Baker to find that. Eventually, we're going to open up relator to more people. Right now, we're just kind of like keeping it super, super hyper-focused. But I think they can go to Patreon and find out more about that. So I think it's Patreon Relator channel Relator. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you do play watch listen as well, right?
Yes, and I'm doing a fucking amazing podcast with Alana Pierce and Mike Bithell and Austin Wintry, three of my favorite people in the world. That comes out weekly, and it's the four people that discuss this industry from four different perspectives. And just like this, we go tangents and go crazy. And Mike Bithell grows a beard every week. So
love it.
Yay. Go That's check out Troy on all the things.
All of the things.
Go ahead, Maud.
Oh, I was just going to say, you can find that podcast where you find your good podcasts, and it's also available on Alana's YouTube channel too, if you want to watch that one every single week. Thank you so much, though, for being a part of Power Up this week. We are going to end things up because we are super over. But, Troy, thank you for that, because I could listen to you talk and tell stories all day long, and it was an absolute pleasure for that one. We'll see you guys next week. Bingo, bye-bye.
Yes, thank you all so very much for tuning in. This was such a special episode. Thank you again to Troy. Thank you again to Amy. Thank you all of you who were here and watched it live. And if you missed a chunk of it and you want to check it out later, make sure to do that over on youtube.com/geekbomb. We are going to head out right now to do Power Down, the after show, which is for Geek Bomb patrons only. So if you want to check that out, that's where you can find it. And thank you to all the followers again, and Ollie Morrison for gift and subs. You guys are awesome. The next time that I will be live is tomorrow morning. I'm doing a charity D&D stream with B-Dave and Nora and a bunch of the lovely folks that you know from the Dungeons & Dragons world over on Luke Gygax's channel, I believe. I'll social it out. You can see where it is. But it starts at 9 a.m. Pacific time tomorrow morning. And then I have a Naked Truth in the afternoon. Maud, any place they can see you coming up soon? Peace. Next week on Power Up. No, if you have Quibi, you can watch Maud on Fresh Daily.
Yeah, that's right. You can. That's right. Fresh Daily. And we're going through, I'll tell you guys first, we're rebranding the show. It's going to have a new name come Monday.
Yep. All right. Well, stay tuned for that hot gossip. And yeah. We'll see you soon. Thanks for watching, everybody. Bye.
Bingo, bongo, bango.